Hey there, MuggleCast listeners! I am back to inform you of some excellent news. GoDaddy.com is having better deals than ever. For only $3.59 a month for 12 months, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package. And with 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts, you can get your own website up and running with success. And as usual, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Today's MuggleNet podcast is brought to you by Borders. In May, thousands of Harry Potter fans descended upon New Orleans for the Phoenix Rising Conference. Borders was there to take in the sights and share a lively discussion of the series that has bewitched the world with some of Harry's most dedicated fans. Listen in and watch the action yourself. Check out the Phoenix Rising Borders Book Club discussion at bordersmedia.com/Harry Potter or click on the Borders banner at the top of the MuggleNet page.
Audiobook download of your...
Because I wholeheartedly approve of, well, you'll just have to wait and see. This is MuggleCast episode 120 for November 18, 2007.
Okay, we're back for another week of MuggleCast, and we have two guests here this week. Mikey, first up. Mikey's back after not being on for a while.
Yeah, you know, I was sleeping.
Mikey, working on any big film projects lately?
Yeah, that's actually...
yes,
yeah,
actually.
Actually, that's why I haven't been around. You know, I've been busy. Been busy. Yeah, you can see my name in the credits of a feature film called The Red Canvas. That should be released sometime next year. I'm an assistant editor on that. I get to work the night shift, so my day starts at like 8 o'clock at night, and then I work till 2, you know, 3 in the morning, which is really nice. Not really, because I'm there all by myself in this like cramped room, but it's got a really cool computer, and I sit there and watch footage and log clips and, you know, all the fun stuff.
Mm, but, logging, fun. Love logging.
Oh, yes. You know, that's how it goes. But, yeah. You know, yeah.
And also this week, making his MuggleCast debut, is Andy McRae from Australia.
Hey.
Andy! Woo! Sorry, and the curls go wild.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andy. It's Mike.
We needed an Eric replacement, someone down in that general area.
You hit it pretty well
so
straight on there.
Andy. Andy, you're the webmaster of what website?
I'm webmaster of HarryPotterFanZone.com.
J.K. Rowling Cite Award winner recently. Is it the most recent?
Yep, it is, and still holding it, luckily.
Awesome. Yes. Until the next website.
You know what I like about Harry Potter FanZone? It was one of the first sites I found. And what I like about it is they actually have the sheet music to the Harry Potter music up there.
And yeah, that's really.
And that's old, but yeah, that was my first bookmark Harry Potter webpage at one point. So
that's cool. Yeah, I've been visiting Harry Potter Princeton for a while too. Well, we got a lot of emails to go through this week, and also there's plenty of news to discuss. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Micah B.
And I'm Andy McRae.
Micah Tannenbaum is in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Micah.
All right, thanks, Andrew. With the Order of the Phoenix DVD having been released earlier this week in the United Kingdom, fans have uploaded two Half-Blood Prince sneak peek clips online. The first clip, entitled Quidditch Back in Style, focuses on what Harry, Ron, and Draco's uniform will look like in the sixth film. The head costume designer said that this year it's more dangerous and that she took some inspiration from American football. The second clip is an interview with production designer Stuart Craig, which he talks about the creation of the orphanage where Tom Riddle lived, making a point of it not being a nice place. Warner Brothers has revamped the official Order of the Phoenix site in preparation for the DVD's December 11th launch in the US, so be sure to head on over and take a look. MTV has published an article on the recently released Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix DVD, which contains a special feature of the fifth film's deleted scenes. The clip also includes two new interviews with production designer Stu Craig and director David Yates. CBBC has revealed that Jesse Cave, having only starred in a TV film called Summerhill, will be playing Lavender Brown in Half-Blood Prince. Jesse is 20 years old. It is not known if she attended the open auditions for Lavender, which were held earlier this year. She may have auditioned separately for the part. Warner Brothers announced earlier this week that 9-year-old Hero Fiennes Tiffin is playing the role of the young Tom Riddle at age 11, while 16-year-old Frank Delane is playing the teenage Riddle, who is already on the path to becoming evil Lord Voldemort. WB has also said that casting for the sixth Harry Potter film, Half-Blood Prince, has now completed. The BBC recently conducted an interview with Harry Potter actor Daniel Radcliffe, where he talked about filming for Half-Blood Prince and what he thought of Deathly Hallows, amongst other things. Dan acknowledged he didn't read the seventh book till about 4 days after it came out, so he was walking around with his fingers in his ears. Luckily, it wasn't spoiled for him. In news that shouldn't surprise anyone, Deathly Hallows was named the best book of 2007 by Amazon.com. From the online warehouse, Was There Any Doubt? The final episode of the most popular series in publishing history, J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, leads our list of the 100 top-selling books on Amazon.com during 2007. They were ranked according to customer orders through October. Only books published for the first time in 2007 were eligible. Finally, when schools begin to slack off in academic achievement, who do they turn to? One school in Nottingham, England, went to Harry Potter and came up with the idea of Potter-themed classes. Since then, they've seen a turnaround in performance. The theme-based approach has catalyzed a dizzying rise in academic achievement at Robert Mellors. 3 years ago, it was languishing in the bottom quarter of English schools and has since vaulted into the top 25. That's all the news for this November 18th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
All right, thank you, Micah.
You're welcome.
Micah, there's been good hot topics this week. Nothing as controversial as what we've been discussing recently, but...
What would that be?
Gay characters, fan sites going against JKR,
all that good stuff.
First up, a new feature from Time Magazine. Time Magazine did a feature on Potter in Harry Potter schools, and first of all, I had to say, I was really proud of this. I made this news post, and then I went to get the link. It was post number 1337. Do you guys know what that means?
Yep. Oh, I understand elite. That. You're elite, Andrew. You're elite.
I'm elite.
You're elite, buddy.
I sent that to Kevin right away, and he was like, I don't get it. He's like, elite. He was like, oh.
Andrew Sims is the big hacksaw, guys.
You know. I can't wait for post 8008. Hopefully I'm going to make that one.
What about 80085? Whoa.
That's just inappropriate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So Time Magazine did this feature on Harry Potter in schools. And basically what it featured, it was a school in England, Nottingham, England. And this school had some decreasing performance rates. The school was like about to go under. And then it was in the bottom quarter of English schools, and then it skyrocketed to the top 25% just by starting to use Harry Potter in the classroom more, making their classes more Harry Potter themed. Like, they would sort the kids in the houses and points and stuff, and then the school explodes. So I'm wondering, I thought it would be a good point, a good time to bring up how in American schools, maybe even in Australia, and I'm sure in other schools in England, so many people, so many kids in English class hate their curriculum. And do you guys think that if Harry Potter started becoming a part of the English-American curriculum, there would be improvements?
I think so. And I don't think it's just Harry Potter. I think it's using other books that have the same appeal that the Potter books have. I think the big problem with English curriculums in the public school system is they choose the most boring books on the face of the earth to read. Like, I'm sorry. Nobody enjoys Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer. I haven't met one person who enjoyed either of those books.
Miss Laura Thompson, I enjoyed Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer. And you got to understand, these books are amazing. They really are. Plus, Huckleberry
are classics.
They are classics, and I'm not denying
Huck
that.
Huck Finn is banned in the U.S. anyway because it's got racist condemnation. So, yeah. Huck Finn. Yeah. Tom Sawyer is readable in schools, but Huck Finn isn't. And, and then you got to remember, JTT was in Tom and Huck, and that's amazing.
Well, I mean, because, like, not even those stories, but some, I can't remember the titles of some of the stories I read in my English class, but one time one of the students brought up in my class, she was just, like, to our teacher, who was a bit of a, you know, a hard butt, he was like, or the student said to him, why can't we read something that actually interests us, like Harry Potter? And he was like, oh, well, Harry Potter, or children's book, you won't learn anything from that. But I mean, if you just listen to our shows, I mean, you could just play 100 of our shows in an English class, and that could be an entire curriculum.
Wow.
Like, what?
A MuggleCast is an English curriculum? Really?
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? I know there's some Harry Potter clubs in schools that will play our podcast from time to time.
That's cool.
For an activity, yeah. What?
I was going to say, don't you think you could run into problems similar to Laura Mallory across the U.S. when they're going to come out and say that they don't want witchcraft being taught in school? And
yeah. Well, and they have the... They have the right to have their children removed from that class or assigned a different reading assignment.
Yeah. And I mean, I've never read Beowulf, but that's sort of a magical tale, isn't it? It's fantasy, right?
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, and I'm not trying to degrade all of these classics, but there is something to be said for the time that they were written in. The style put into a modern classroom puts kids asleep. I'm not going to lie.
I agree with Laura completely, but I think Beowulf, I didn't read that till probably about freshman or sophomore year in high school.
Yeah.
And I think at the time, because we were studying that type of literature, you know, that's when we were reading the Shakespeare stuff. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've read The Tempest throughout my high school, you know, in all the different classes, deconstructing it. But, you know, it's at that time period, those books are definitely appropriate. I'm thinking more elementary school, definitely Harry Potter and other books of that sort, you know, of that sort would be more interesting to the students. Because I remember reading 1984 in eighth grade, and I loved it. It was, you know, right at the time I was starting to get into politics. I love the message. You know, I definitely think they should, you know, focus on books and, you know, definitely change the curriculum. Because, you know, you can't read Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe 3 years in a row from second grade to fourth grade. You really can't.
Which everyone does, though.
Yeah, everyone does.
I reckon,
you know.
Too, like...
I've never read that book either. Sorry, Andy.
It depends what age range, like, you're sort of talking at. Like, primary school or elementary school kids probably would love, like, studying Harry Potter, but, I mean, if you're in high school or something, are people going to treat it the same way?
I don't know. They read Harry Potter at the high school I went to.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that would... I think that would just be unheard of if we read it in my school.
Well, same
with my school.
Well, there's college classes dedicated to Harry Potter, deconstructing the universe, using the prose, you know, so there's definitely reasons, you know, that Harry Potter is good for all age levels, and, you know, each person's going to get something different out of it. You know, I remember growing up as a kid, and again, going back to my Star Wars, I loved the Star Wars series because it was flashy and exciting, but as I got older, you know, I started to see the story arcs, you know, all the different stuff. Same thing with Harry Potter. You know, I started reading it when I was much older. I didn't get into it when, you know, unlike Emerson, I didn't get into it when I was young. I read book 1 through 6 in a span of 2 weeks. And by doing that, you know, one, I devoured it the first reading as just a story that was amazing. Right. Then I started going back and kind of what MuggleCast does, I deconstructed everything and started going, oh, and this. And then, of course, the theories followed after that. And there's still theories that I have, but those will be another day. Another day when it's Mikey Cast. I mean,
I'm kind of in the same boat as Mikey, though, because I didn't read the books until I was older either, until I was in college. So the other thing I was going to bring up, though, talking about college courses, I know that some of the incoming freshman classes while I was in college had to read Sorcerer's Stone. And now I don't know if they read that because they were going to debate the impact of it on society as a whole and that kind of a thing, but I know for a fact that they had to read it. So it is being pushed at the college level as well.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for the way classes are taught, too, because I recently read Dracula in one of my classes here, and when I was reading it here, I was like, wow, I would have hated this in high school, because in high school, I would have been forced to read it and come in and just take a test on it, whereas in my college classes, we have whole discussions about underlying themes and things that would have never gotten talked about in high school, because they would have been deemed too controversial. So I think that's the problem with the public schools, is that they're underestimating what children can handle. And when I say children, I mean anybody, you know, age elementary through high school.
Yeah, but I mean, even if we get back to Harry Potter, like, I think the big concern is most schools see Harry Potter as too much of a children's book, and you couldn't go in depth. And maybe it's not even the schools themselves; it could be the teachers too that think it's just a children's book.
You know, I don't think.
Well, like the teachers need to know like the books as deeply as we do. I don't think they'd really know them as much as us fans do. So they're not really going to be teaching stuff that. It's going to be hard,
You know, Andrew, I don't necessarily think it would be the teachers, because I know, you know, if you go to any of the Harry Potter conventions, it's filled up with teachers. I think it's more the parents of the students going, oh, why is my kid reading Harry Potter? That's a children's book, and he's in sixth grade, or she's in sixth grade, seventh grade. Shouldn't she be learning something more? You know, but
That's true.
You know, I don't know about you, but I have a really close relationship with my family. But even growing up, I know for a fact my mom and dad never really paid that much attention to my school homework. If I needed help, they would help me. But, you know, they don't know what books I was reading completely for school. Like, yes, they bought them, but, like, they didn't go any further. You know, half the time they hadn't read some of them. You know, my mom was able to couldn't help me after, you know, sixth grade math homework. You know, starting into algebra and everything, she just didn't want to deal with it anymore. It was too difficult for her to handle. It was just too much effort for them to keep up with what I was learning at the time. And now, you know, going into college, finishing up now, you know, some of the stuff I've had to read and deconstruct, my parents are just like, you know, my dad would be like, okay, I'll read the book because you said it's a good book. Cause, you know, I recommend it to him. But my mom would just be like, yeah, it doesn't interest me. It's a different story. I don't like it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I
think something...
You know, I was just going to say, so I can definitely see it being more parents, you know, if schools issued Harry Potter books as required reading, you know, yes, it's required reading, you know, I definitely think it'd be great for a family thing to start reading it together, or, you know, the students reading it, but I think it's going to be more parents, you know, especially in the U.S., backlashing, you know, this is a children's book because it's been dubbed a children's book by so many, and the parents, especially for families that don't read, because again, you know, our society is so, engrossed in media, you know, TV, movies, you know, internet, everything, that there's really not much reading going on. That's why, you know, Harry Potter has been such a big phenomenon, because it's getting kids to read. But parents haven't read Harry Potter. And by kids being required to, it's like, this is a children's book. Why are my kids reading it?
Yeah, I think something else hurting it, too, is also the movies now. I mean, Harry Potter is really commercialized. So if you took it in a serious class, something that might make teachers or schools hesitate is the fact that, oh, well, they'll just watch the movies and try to catch up on the reading that way. I mean, because that's what I've always... there's been a couple of books in, like, middle school or high school that we've read, and the teacher's even like, yeah, this was made into a movie, and then we're like, we should just watch the movie. I mean, but you can't learn that way at all.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But still, I mean, Harry Potter's so commercialized... I would think you really can't take it as seriously as, say, not Beowulf now that the movie's out, but, you know,
Lord of the
just
Rings.
Any classic tale. Or Lord of the Rings,
I had to read that in high school.
But, like, I don't know if the vibe is like this in the US around Harry Potter, but, like, every time we have a book or a movie release here, like, they'll have it all over the papers, and the front page will be, like, a picture of a four-year-old
exactly.
in glasses. Like,
yes.
They kind of try and dumb it down. This is, like, a three-year-old's book when, like, the real fans at our age.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's why so many people are always like, oh, it's a children's book. It's a little kid's book.
You know, Andy, I agree with you on that they're trying to dumb it down as a children's book. But I can't really say – you can't really say that the real fans are our age. You know, there's fans, you know, at every age, you know. I remember at the bookstore, there was like three-year-olds just walking around with their mom. And they were dressed up as Harry Potter. You know they love the movies. You know they love their mom reading the book to them. They're huge fans of it.
Yeah, but they don't understand. They don't understand. They don't understand what's happening.
I know.
There's
no
way.
But I'm just saying, you know, to stop the emails from coming in, we don't think that only fans that are older are true fans. Everybody can be a fan. See, I'm being political right now, Andrew. I'm taking care of the emails. I don't want Andy to get the...
Everyone can be a fan.
I don't want Andy to get the email.
Everyone can take something out of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. Everyone can be a fan coming out of it. I just don't want like hundreds of emails saying, what are you guys talking about? I'm a true fan and I'm only 12. But, you know, I know you guys are fans. Everyone's a fan.
There are some very, very, very... We have some very intelligent younger listeners. Ages 10, 11, 12. Very smart. Scares me how smart. That's smarter than me.
Well, that's not very hard, Andrew.
I'm not kidding. Well, it could be true. Another news story. WB confirmed the rest of the cast for Half-Blood Prince. All the usuals are there. Alan Rickman. I stop at Alan Rickman.
Daniel Radcliffe, maybe.
They were confirmed a while ago. Amanda Lynch was confirmed, although that was nothing new. David Bradley, Roddy Coltrane.
That's what I was going to ask. Mr. Coltrane, you know, it wasn't Ben Chain. Wasn't Ben Chain, that's good.
No, Ben was not cast. He tried, but not this year.
Romeo
Tom Felton, Michael Gambon, Maggie Smith. Julie Walters, Matt Lewis, Bonnie Wright, etc., etc. And then also we have three new casting announcements that were made this week. The first one was confirmed by CBBC earlier this week. It was Jesse Cave, but we'll get to her in 1 minute. There were two other people. Hero Fiennes Tiffin is playing the role of young Tom Riddle. He's 9 years old, but he's playing the 11-year-old Tom Riddle. And then Frank Delane, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. He's 16 years old. He's playing teenage Tom Riddle. So there were some rumors suggesting that Ralph Fiennes' nephew, I guess it is, was to be getting this role. And then, of course, it was confirmed. And then this Frank Delane. Both of these, all three of these new casting announcements these actors and actress are brand new to the filming industry. They've had one or two small projects. I know Frank Delane and Jesse Cave both have had one. I don't think Hero has had one.
Is that,
Hero is such a cool name.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that how you pronounce it? Hero?
It's probably not. It's probably like Hero.
Such a cool name.
It is cool.
I thought when I first read that, like, is he a hero? Or wait, is that his
name? I wasn't sure either.
Like, can you imagine going to like a grade school and like you get like the super sticker because you did a good job? You're a superhero. Yeah! That'd be so cool.
Hey, hero. Your ego would be so high all the time. You know, hey, hero.
You know, when I see hero, I'm like looking at the word right now or his name. And I think Hiro from the show Heroes. And I just want to jump and go, Yota! I don't know if you ever watch Heroes, people. But
No, I haven't.
I actually jumped up and down.
So there's this new girl, Jessie Cave, and Laura brought up to me the other day. I didn't even know this was really going on. But Laura, you said there are quite a few people, I guess, on MuggleNet or in some message boards or something, complaining, as usual, about another girl who's been cast because she's not up to the fan standards.
And let me just say something. This
She's
is
up
what
to my
really.
Micah, let's keep in mind that she's
a really.
Oh, never mind. No, you're good. Okay, continue.
She's 20.
Children
isn't she?
Listen to this show, Micah.
Yeah, so take
20.
That.
Yeah,
come on.
20. Sorry. I thought she was under 18.
Anyway,
never mind. Fair game. Go ahead.
Something that really, really irks me about our fandom is that anytime a girl is cast in these movies, all of the girls get together and complain about it. And they nitpick over little stupid things. They find the smallest physical imperfection that they can find and then call this poor girl ugly. And she's certainly not ugly at all. Furthermore, there has never been any physical description of what Lavender looks like in the books. So stop complaining. Who cares? Does it matter? You're all just jealous because she's going to hook up with Rupert Grint.
That's
what I was about to say. They're all just jealous.
Yeah.
I have some friends that are upset with the casting just because they recast Lavender Brown.
And, Lavender used to be black.
That's one thing I do kind of, I definitely say, okay, they probably shouldn't have, considering this girl has played Lavender in quite a few films already.
Who was she? Because I don't even remember them addressing her in the film. I think she was just named that way in the credits, right?
You know, she was,
well, there is
she
a picture
was
of her.
In the film.
Yeah, Time magazine did a picture of like all the Harry Potter characters, and she was also in Time there, and she was also credited that in like two or three of the films. But she's been in almost all of them, I believe. Again, don't quote me on that. I'm not looking at like IMDb with her right now.
I'll look it up while you talk.
But yeah, so she, you know, I definitely kind of find that, you know. I don't know what I would say. I guess they maybe she didn't have the acting ability to pull off the role, because definitely Lavender now has a little bit bigger spotlight in this film. But it's one of those things where, you know, the girl that portrayed her originally was, you know, African American, or she was black, and you know, now they cast someone else and not even the same race, not same, you know, looks nothing alike. So if you were following, you know, the movies and not the books, I know there's plenty of people that watch just the movies, you know, and if you watch any of the stuff, it'll be like, well, who is this new person? How come she hasn't been there before? But she's been a changed person. And they've done that before, but
yeah,
it's really...
they did it with Padma and Parvati, too.
They did it with Pansy Parkinson as well.
Yeah, those were all recast. Yeah.
But it's just kind of one of those things where I don't know. Like,
I just checked the Goblet of Fire and Chamber of Secrets credits, and I can't find anyone credited as Lavender Brown. But yeah, you are right. There was that Entertainment Weekly article where there's a picture of her, and she's a black girl, and it says Lavender Brown, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, honestly, nobody's going to notice, really. I mean, the only reason people are making a fuss about that little part in particular is because of that one picture. There may be more pictures, but any typical fan, I'm sure WB's official response, if we asked them, would be, oh, here it is, Jennifer Smith. She's credited in the Prisoner of Azkaban credits. But that's the only film she's ever done. So I think she was just really an extra.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're an extra, you can't
be
an actress.
I think they just use that as an excuse to throw her name in the credits. You know, just make it seem like they were casting all of these people, as opposed to just putting extra one, extra two, etc. You know, like...
Maybe there was a reference in Prisoner of Azkaban where Harry's like, oh, Lavender and all them, and maybe he gestures and she's over there waving or something.
I don't even remember them mentioning Lavender at all in the film. That was kind of my big objection to it, when everybody was kind of having this problem with the recast. And I'm like, well, they didn't even talk about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's weird that they cast, like, such a minor character, but they named her, because like in Order of the Phoenix there were some minor characters that were featured in promotional stills, and they were called Slightly Creepy Boy, and I didn't give them a name.
Yeah, no.
There really was someone called Slightly Creepy Boy.
Well, I also like how Nigel magically appeared out of nowhere, so
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, no, I definitely, you know, it's definitely fine. But I understand people kind of being a little irked about it, and, you know, it's not my biggest thing is like what I respond to them is like, are you not going to go see the sixth movie? They're like, no, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I'm like, exactly.
Well,
let's see how it turns out. You know, if she does a horrible job, then maybe you have a little bit more excuse to be like, they should have left the other girl who had the right act. But I highly doubt Warner Brothers is going to do something like that. You know, their job is to get the right people to act. Plus, you know, really, I remember reading in an interview somewhere that Rupert was there helping pick out. I gotta say, Rupert's got good taste.
Yeah.
She's very pretty. And, you know, what I have to say is, ladies, stop sitting here and bashing this poor girl and calling her ugly. Because girls constantly complain about being objectified. But then when you turn around and do it to another girl, you're just as bad. So stop it.
Spank, spank, spank. I'll go right out there and say she's hot. Micah, Mikey, Andy,
I really hands down, hands down.
Clearly, what do you say,
hands
Andy?
Down.
I don't know. No problems for the role at all.
Hands down, best casting ever. Sorry, guys.
You know, if
you guys don't know where that's from, go look through some of the, you know, MuggleCast archives, and you'll find it.
The first live leaky mug.
Yes,
hands down.
Best movie ever.
Okay.
That's right, Simsy. Don't worry.
I've changed since then. It's been
you've grown
over 2 years. When was the Goblet of Fire premiere?
I don't know.
November 12th, wasn't it?
I don't know. I remember listening to the live show at home on my headphones. It was nice.
You're like, wow, these guys got potential.
Yeah.
So moving along.
Only if they say my name three times, I'll magically appear.
Yeah.
All right, where are we
at moving
now?
Along, in other Half-Blood Prince news, there was also we got two. Mike, do you have something else to say?
No, I was just wondering. So this is the final cast. They're not going to be looking at
any
other
characters. There's got to be more announcements.
I mean,
well, there's got to be more announcements. Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at our brand new Movie 6 section, it's not a complete cast.
Right.
Especially when you compare it to other cast pages.
So it just means on their end that they've completed casting, but they maybe haven't made all the announcements yet, because we're still missing a good amount of people.
Yeah.
I would think, anyway, right? I mean, there's no Gaunt family that's been cast yet.
Like Katie Bell,
yeah, that
too.
Could be a problem.
Or how about
Bill Weasley? I would think he might have to be in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Grayback.
Yeah. What was this press release by WB? What did it say exactly? I'm trying to find it now. Here it is. Casting is complete on Half-Blood Prince. So I guess they just really haven't announced everyone yet.
Well, you know what? The casting is probably complete for the entire, you know, everything. And they probably haven't announced it because some of the people they've cast, they probably have two or three people for it still, even though it's been cast between those two people and whoever comes out best on camera. Because a lot of times they'll do is, like, for smaller parts, background characters that may not even say anything. Because, like, we know the Gaunts, except for, what's the father's Gaunt? Not Merope's father's name.
Marvolo.
Yeah, how come I didn't know that? Wow. I'm tired. Marvolo is the only one that speaks English, you know, and Merope is quiet the whole time, and, you know, her brother is speaking in...
Maybe it's also that they want to spread out the announcements, you know, sort of keep the excitement going.
The buzz.
Yeah, the buzz, exactly. Throw a little buzz out there. As soon, you know what happens? I've noticed this a lot. Whenever there's a big book announcement, WB always comes back with something to make sure nobody's forgotten about them. Like, I remember there was a huge news story, news book story, and I can't remember what it was, but, like, a few hours later, after it was, like, all the buzz on the websites, WB sends us just a crap load of new pictures, and out of the blue, it's just like, post these. I'm like, okay. But it's like, don't forget about us.
Well, you know,
it's
still doing it,
really. Released. Here's 36 new pictures.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like you, Andrew, releasing the 12-hour MogoCast as, you know, different segments instead of as one big.
Well, because I wanted to get the episode count up a little bit. And but I mean, when you're doing a 12-hour show, that's a huge download file anyway, and I don't know.
There's people that listen the entire time, buddy. I'm just saying.
There were. Oh, yeah, definitely. Those were the people who could. Anyone else can't. But I guess there are some people who might have listened to all of them straight through. But it was a good idea. Just go with it. So, all right, I guess there's nothing else to say about that. I'm sure, yeah, Mike, I think you bring up a good point. We're still waiting for quite a few more casting announcements. The cast page still has room to grow. So, it's time to get work back for another interview. Half-Blood Prince sneak peek. We got this the other day. There's a couple things to talk about with this story. So this was a really good idea I thought WB had. When they announced that there was going to be a sneak peek at Half-Blood Prince on the Order of the Phoenix DVD, I thought, how are they doing that? I mean, they just started filming, and how do they have stuff already to put on the DVD? Because they you know, you have to have this DVD prepared like a month or two ago to go to print and all that. And then here comes this brilliant idea. It's online, but you have to have your disc in the computer in order to click on these clips. I thought that was a great idea. Did anyone else get excited? I thought that was so cool.
I guess.
Dork.
No, I guess.
See,
yeah, dork, exactly.
Well, you know, Andrew, I would be more excited if the sneak peek is not just, like, these clips, the initial clips, but more stuff. So that way, it's really not just like, oh, I'll go rent the movie for a day and see all the extra clips. But I want to make sure that I buy it and I own it.
That's a good point.
So more stuff to come. So I can see the new Quidditch costume. So I can see, you know, the scenes or interview with, you know, with Dan talking about, you know,
Mikey, you should be on their marketing team. That's a pretty good idea.
I personally just think I should start, be an assistant editor or an editor for the Harry Potter films. You know, as a fan that loves it, that's what I do. Warner Brothers, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
They don't listen.
I know. Okay. Well, who knows?
I think David Heyman listens to the podcast.
Really?
Really?
David, I do have please, it's a dream of mine.
I think he has. I think he said something once in an interview. In an interview he did at the LA premiere that made me think he...
No, he goes to MuggleNet, not MuggleCast.
No, but he also said something about he listens to us all the time, but he wasn't... He was like, I read and listen to you guys all the time. I think that's what he said. Something like that.
I think you're right, because when we were at Enlightening, Emerson was talking to the crowd about David Heyman and that interview that you guys did, and I think he was saying that, we should all be nice to David Heyman because he listens to what we say.
We'll have to rewatch that interview anyway.
I like David Heyman.
He's cool. He's
David,
really
just
nice.
So you know, I like you. I'm an editor.
Okay. I hate to go off tangent one more time.
Oh,
but
wow.
Laura, I just remembered this today. I completely forgot about it. You, Ben, and I talked to him for a couple of minutes at the after party.
Oh, that was
one-on-one.
So cool.
That was really nice because he was very nice about, talking with us, and we were just, we were sucking up to him. We were saying it's unbelievable, this whole thing that you've been running for the past,
but he was
8 years
very
now.
Genuinely nice, and he seemed really, really happy to be there.
Yeah.
So I was really happy to see that.
Yeah, it was great actually talking to him. Great guy. But, okay, so anyway, they have one for Sneak Peeks. I'm hoping everyone saw these. It looks pretty good. It's nothing new. I mean, it's new, but it's nothing out of the ordinary.
Nothing new,
right. It's more of the same. They're filming. Dan's on set. And there's cameras around him. There was a very nice interview with Stuart Craig, production designer. That's it. There's an interview with him on the new set, where he talks about the orphanage and how great it's going to be and how much effort they're putting into it. Then there's another clip with the interview with the costume designer, and she goes over the brand new Quidditch costumes, or the Quidditch cloaks. And they have new padding, and they have these new helmets.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Andy about this last night. They're not very good, are they, Andy?
I don't know. I reckon they kind of look like fighter pilots or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she said in that interview that they weren't sure yet if they were actually going to have them on while they're playing, right? Just for practice.
She said they were going to be for training or practice or something, but they didn't know if they'd put them in the actual scene.
I think that just shows that they're not too sure about them either. Maybe. And then The new cloaks do look good, I think. And it's nice to see that they're updating the Quidditch outfits. They're putting some effort into it since they've skipped out on Quidditch in Order of the Phoenix and Goblet of Fire. It was the Quidditch World Cup was in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And that's about it.
You know what I would like to see?
Hmm?
I would like to see them play Quidditch at the Burrow. You know how they do those games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that'd be sweet. I wanted to see them fly the tables around in the fourth one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot I would like to see that I never...
Well, we all know that. That's,
when you get to work on the films, Mikey, then...
I'll make the special MuggleNet edition with all the stuff we want to see, and I'll sit there for years doing all the special effects myself. But fans, I will do it if I get,
So the DVD came out. It was just in England, not in Australia, right, Andy?
Yeah, it's out here. We got it last Wednesday.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay. Well, we could have a quick review here.
The first time ever.
So,
I thought it was great. Lots of good special features, especially the one Trailing Tonks, which is the behind-the-scenes one. That was great. Very funny.
What's in that again?
It just follows, I think her name's Natalia Tenner, who plays Tonks. It just follows her around the set, doing random stuff, playing guitar. Laughing at people.
Having her nose change. Awesome. Her nose changes every once in a while. Right.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. How do all the menus and such work? Are they good?
The menus are great. Same guy narrating that narrates all the menus. The the actual disc with the movie on it's really great. It's got the phone booth going into the ministry, and the special features one has got the black tapestry, and like all the special features are on that, which looks really cool.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's great. I've watched it a few times now.
How are the deleted scenes?
Pretty good. There's sort of 2 minutes of Trelawney eating, and then there's a few other good ones.
Wait, not drinking, eating?
Yeah. Come on, we found this out a while ago.
No,
just kind of sitting at the table.
I was making a joke since she is an alcoholic, but
okay.
She just likes to have a drink when times are getting hard.
Yeah. So, all right, well, that's cool. As for us in America, we still have to wait till December 11th, so it's a little under a month now. And the thing is, here's what happened. This Half-Blood Prince sneak peek came out. People got their DVDs. They were able to watch it. Then people figured out how to download it and get it on YouTube. You can download the Flash file, convert that to something YouTube will take, put it up. So it gets up on YouTube, all the fan sites post it, and then WB starts taking them down. And the thing that got me about this, and I said it to Micah, was, all right, WB is asking for this. When you're releasing a film in Australia and England a month before you do in America, the American fans are going to go nuts, and they're going to want to see it online, so people put it online, put these sneak peeks online at least. And, you know, WB keeps trying to take them down, but it's like, why not just release the movie at the same time, and then you wouldn't have to worry about that?
Haven't they typically released all the DVDs at the same time in the past?
Yeah. Well, the U.S. certainly hasn't had to wait a month.
We usually get it about 3 months later, so this is a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. Well, they trying to be fair? Like, Australia complain, and then they're like, okay, you get it a month before America now.
Well, I know at the very least, the U.S. and the U.K. got them around the same time, like within a few days of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's interesting is it's not just the U.K. and Australia. It's other countries that the DVD has been released in as well. It seems like
South America got it before all of us.
Yeah.
They got it in, like, end of October.
I wonder if it has to do with the Christmas season. Like, they want to get it closer to Christmas to put it under more trees or something?
Could be true.
If they sell it in November, it's going to be under plenty of trees. I mean, that's when you start putting out all your
Christmas. But I'm just thinking, like, I guess it shouldn't matter to WB, really, whether it goes under a Christmas tree or not, as long as you're still buying it.
It's all just hype.
It's all the hype, you said?
Yeah, all hype and publicity and... How can they sell the most DVDs?
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, one DVD that's coming out soon, of course I know this, Hairspray comes out Tuesday. Now,
I know Hairspray comes out Tuesday, buddy. I've been watching for that to come out, too.
I'll be buying the Shake and Shimmy edition. Thank you very much. I just wonder, do they think, like, oh, there's already a big DVD coming out, we want publicity, we want, like, a week to ourselves, where we have all the publicity we want? Or is it something else?
What other?
No, because Hairspray is a huge movie release. I mean, it was huge over the summer.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's going to be.
Did it outsell Harry Potter even? Was it even close? Like, I mean, I love Hairspray. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think they would be in any sort of competition.
I'm just grasping at straws. I mean, I can't think of any other besides the holiday thing.
I don't think Hairspray and Harry Potter would be in that much competition.
Oh, yeah, they are.
I have to say, I think they appeal to the same people.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but I don't think a Harry Potter fan and a Hairspray fan would go out and buy one DVD over the other. They're going to buy both. Like,
well, you know what? I you know, if it came down between one DVD or the other to me,
I'd buy Hairspray. No, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is going to happen. You'd have to go with your Harry Potter friend, so Andrew could buy Hairspray for us, and we can watch it, and then I'll buy the Harry Potter. And we'll watch Hairspray first.
Also, feature set-wise, I think Hairspray's got like a four-hour documentary on the making of it. They went all out on the feature, but anyway.
If you'd like cheap music from Hairspray, head over to Harry Potter Fan Zone.
you know what's funny, though? I think I actually saw Hairspray more than Order of the Phoenix in theaters.
Oh, me too.
So because did I.
I've seen it five times now.
But no, it's because I saw an advanced screen of Hairspray, and then I saw it again, and then I think I saw it twice with Andrew at one point. And
you saw it once with us.
I don't know. I saw Hairspray a ridiculous amount of times. I went with my mom. I'm like, why am I seeing this movie so many times? But I do have a fondness for musicals. So I'm waiting for Harry Potter the musical, really.
you know.
Yeah, which should be coming
out. It's like the mysterious ticking noise.
Yeah.
Snape, Severus, you know, and then Dumbledore. I love Dumbledore. He's my favorite. You know what? That Dumbledore, you know, Dumbledore coming out of the closet. That's him going, Dumbledore. That's him. That's him. I love it.
Oh God. You know.
Why do I keep talking? Let's continue on.
Okay. I'm wondering the same thing. Hey, I guess there's nothing else to say. Maybe we'll try to get something out of WB.
Oh,
you know, to answer why.
The only other DVD that is coming out that week or that date actually is the Bourne Ultimatum.
That's definitely not competition. I don't think.
You're sure they're both actions? They're both action movies.
Yeah, but it's different audience still.
Let's see.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see what happens there. Wow, we managed to take up 45 minutes with news talk. Good work, guys. That's a new record, I think. All right, let's get on to some announcements now. There's actually a few this week for once, and they're all new. First of all, earlier this week, let me set this up. There was a article in my school newspaper about what I do with MuggleCast, and that was a few days. The article came out a few days after our episode 119, which we'll get to in a minute. It wasn't exactly our best show, our best live show.
No.
Especially in the call-in part. So I was like, oh, crap. All these people are going to go and look and see this episode and think I suck. So everyone might have noticed that news post I made on MuggleCast saying, new to the show? If you're a new listener looking for a few good episodes, check these out. So I sort of hoping people looked at that. But then I came up with the idea for the MuggleCast Wall of Fame, which is our sort of like... showcasing the best episodes we've done. So we came up with this page. Mikey contributed with an episode or two, and then I also added at the bottom, if anyone has an episode that really stands out to them in terms of like quality and just really good quality episode, email it into mcwalloffame@gmail.com, mcwalloffame@gmail.com, and I'm sort of going to take a poll and see which episodes get the most votes, and then we'll add them on there, and that'll just be a nice little archive of our best shows, and it'll be a nice thing to go back and look at, especially if you're a new listener and you're looking for some good episodes. You know, we can recommend those to you. So there's a banner at MuggleCast.com for those. We encourage you to check those out. Also, anyone here got a Zune?
I do.
Mikey, you do?
No,
you get it
I
off
don't.
Woot?
No, online. Actually, about the Zune, some of you know I work for Apple, and in fact, a couple of MuggleCast listeners came into the Apple store when I was working the other day.
Really?
Yeah, during the Leopard release. It was kind of cool seeing that I was hanging out there working, not really doing anything at Apple. But they're like, are you Mikey from MuggleCast? And I'm like, yeah. Like, you know, I'm at work, you know. And they came up, and so I took a picture with them. That was kind of cool.
Oh, cute.
Aww. Yeah, you know, it was cool. They come into my work.
I don't know how that worked. You were like, speaking of Zunes, ..
I work for Apple, the iPod versus Zune.
So, for the 10 people who have a Zune, Microsoft started basically the Zune equivalent of iTunes. And you can go onto their marketplace, and you can subscribe to podcasts there now, because Zune now supports podcasts. And MuggleCast is in there. So if you have a Zune and you want to subscribe to MuggleCast, make sure you have the latest Zune software update. And then there's a link right there on MuggleCast.com underneath the big on-air button that takes you to the Zune marketplace to subscribe to MuggleCast. So I just thought, let everyone know. Also, if you have any friends who like Harry Potter and who have a Zune, recommend that to them. Also, real quick, I just want to say about Terminus. I just want to clear up what was said last week. I want to clear up that Terminus didn't actually say no to us or reject us. We just never approached them, and they thought we didn't fit in with what they needed compared to other podcasts. I just want to clear that up because apparently some fans were saying to Terminus, oh, why'd you say no to MuggleCast? Actually, they never said no to us. They just didn't want us from the start. we'll get to Muggle Mail. We'll focus on a lot of emails this week.
The first one comes from Brenna, age 18, from San Diego, California. And she says, some shows do have an age limit, and I believe this is in reference to Eck was being on Broadway.
Yeah.
Because of scary or inappropriate material, I know that the Broadway musical Wicked has a limit of 6, because it might be frightening to young kids. So I would think that they wouldn't allow small children to see it, but who knows? Also, you guys need to stop worrying.
Nah, don't include
okay.
that. Oh, actually, good. No, never mind. Go on.
Way to cut me off. Okay.
No, sorry.
All right. Also, you guys need to stop worrying over Terminus and start planning a trip to San Diego, California for Comic-Con in 2008 in July.
You know, it's not a bad idea because MuggleNet was invited to Comic-Con last year, and there's this huge miscommunication where Comic-Con was even advertising that MuggleNet was going to be
right.
a certain venue, and like
nobody
was there. Emerson and I think it was supposed to be like Emerson and Ben or something, and they were probably on the other side of the country, I think. So that didn't work out very well. But, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Comic-Con's a big event, and they have some Harry Potter stuff there, so who knows.
Comic-Con's fun.
Next email comes from Abby13 of New Jersey. She writes, "Well, I was listening to episode 119. I was thinking that you could make a quack pack from the funny quack. Love the show, Quack Abby." You know, that's a better idea than cucumber pack. Let's do quack pack.
What was cucumber pack?
It was going to be the sequel to Pickle Pack.
Why do we need a sequel to Pickle Pack?
It was just a joke.
Okay, I was about to be like, oh god, another year of Blickles.
No, they would be called Clickles.
Because sequels are better than the original? No.
Yeah,
no,
not always.
Actually, almost never. But
Another email, I think Mikey should be able to address this one. This comes from Bethany32 of Goshen, Indiana. She writes, "Is Steve Clovis a member of the Writers Guild? If so, is that strike affecting the shooting of Half-Blood Prince? Also, if Clovis will also be the screenwriter on Deathly Hallows, do you think this strike will push back that movie's pre-production, since he probably starts working on the script long before they start prepping each movie?"
Ooh.
Mikey, I thought I heard somewhere that the Writers Guild will... this strike will eventually affect movie writers.
Oh, it definitely will. So right now, the Writers Guild, they're on strike, and I actually have quite a few friends that are on strike, and I find it kind of funny. Like, I definitely respect what they're doing, but I kind of find it funny because, you know, these are creative types that, you know, sit on their computer and write and drink coffee, and, you know, they're not, you know, the striker type people, right?
Right,
but
right.
And they're like, dude, I have to go pick it. I'm like, you're really going to go down in front of the studio and stand there with your little sign and march across it? And he's like, yeah, I have to. They're telling me I have to. So what the guild is really affecting right now with the strike is it's definitely affecting TV shows. Is Cloves an American or is he...
No.
If he's not American, then he's not part of the Writers Guild. If he's, you know, because I know it's not affecting, you know, Canadian productions. A lot of productions have jumped up there recently. And UK is not affected by this, but this is definitely affecting just the US writers. It can affect, you know, movies because, you know, sequels and stuff like that.
I got to cut you off. Yeah, he is.
He's
American.
It definitely, you know, it's definitely going to affect him. Probably not so much for Deathly Hallows, because I would be surprised if he even started production for that script, you know, started working on until, you know, mid of 2008, even.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the movie won't be released till end of 2008 of Half-Blood Prince, so I'd be very surprised if he even started, you know, but while the strike is on, unless it lasts a very long time. The longest strike lasted, you know, 6 weeks, I believe, from the Writers'
Guild. I think it was 22.
Was it 22?
It was 22, yeah.
6 months. I remember the last one was a very long time, and...
Did you say 6 months?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said 6 weeks.
Oh, I may have said 6 weeks, but I meant 6 months. But it lasted 6 months, and I definitely, you know, agree with what they're demanding, because right now it's really affecting more TV show writers. You know, I don't expect it to last, you know, more than 6 months, and I don't think it will affect Deathly Hallows too much, but it definitely could affect the movie industry.
Yeah, which is kind of scary. Another email now from Emma14 of Salt Lake City. She writes, "Hey guys, love the show. When you guys were talking about Fox and his location after Dumbledore died, I think he would go live with Aberforth, and to get around the whole ownership thing, he would just come and go as he pleases." I think that's a okay thought. I don't know if Aberforth would really care for Fox, though.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that would have been mentioned, too. Like,
I'm pretty sure. Sorry.
No, I mean, I think that once Dumbledore died, like, I think that it was very symbolic that Harry kept hearing the, what was it? The song?
Phoenix song.
Yeah, the Phoenix song. He kept hearing it. And then suddenly he realized it had stopped. And, like, he realized everything that had just happened. So I feel like it was just very symbolic and very telling of the fact that Fox was, like, gone to wherever phoenixes go whenever their owners die.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think
that would have been funny if, like... Go ahead, Micah.
I was just going to say that I was pretty sure Joe said that Fox was non-transferable, meaning that he wouldn't go anywhere else. So I don't know where he would go, but it's not he's not going to go and live with anybody else in particular. He's going to the Phoenix Zoo, and I don't know. I'm making that up. But
wouldn't it be funny if, like, you know, it's that whole sad scene where Fox flies off into the distance, and he just makes a sharp left turn and ends up in Aberforth's.
That would...
I could sort of... It's sort of like sort of Family Guy, Simpsons-ish.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's what I was thinking.
All right, so, and then in the second part of Emma's email, she writes, I have something for you to discuss on the show this week. If you guys could make a death scene for Tonks and Lupin, what would happen? Just seeing how creative you guys could get. I guess none of us are really writers, but anyone have, like, their fantasy death scene? Did anyone ever give that any thought?
I've never thought about it. I didn't really imagine that Tonks and Lupin were killed by anybody highly significant or anybody that we knew, just because Joe didn't mention it. You know, like,
she did.
Who'd she say killed them? I don't remember.
Oh, she did in a web chat.
Killed Tonks.
Yep. And then...
Okay.
And Dolohov killed Lupin, I think.
Well, see, I actually imagined Lupin's death. And the reason for this is because, you know, we've gone on tour with Alex Carpenter from the Remus Lupins, and we've had, you know, a whole night where we were discussing, like, how would Lupin go out? And we came up with this exact, you know, this crazy thing where Dolohov and Lupin were there, and Lupin was actually saving babies, and, you know, he went out as a champ. You know, he saved 1,000 wizards by sacrificing himself. You know, if it wasn't, if he didn't die, you know, Harry probably would have lost. That's what would have happened. Because, you know, it was Lupin was the pivotal role. But, and Joe just didn't want to take away from Harry's, you know, victory by describing Lupin's, you know, epic, you know, battle against Dolohov. So I've discussed it. You know, it's pretty awesome. You know, one day you guys can read our transcript of it, but it's pretty awesome.
Maybe we'll make a video of it with Alex being an actor. Since he has starred in film projects before.
Oh, yes, we should.
I've not always, but if I were to picture it, I would picture it like Titanic-ish. Like, like Jack. It's like, Jack, I'll never let go. It's like, Tonks, I'll never let go. And then, since they are sort of newlyweds.
And then Avada Kedavra from each end and they die. That's really sad.
And they let go.
You do, come on. You know, I can see Tonks maybe like tripping over, like, her cloak and falling into Bellatrix, and Bellatrix is like, ah! And, you know, that way.
Right.
Although that's not... ah! You know, actually, that's kind of sad. Because I think Tonks is better than that.
I could see even Bellatrix sneaking up from behind on Tonks and killing her that way. Because
maybe Bellatrix just, like, comes out of nowhere, and then Tonks just falls through a cloth, and then it's all unexplained.
or maybe Tonks was, like, trying to deal with her metamorphosis skills, because, you know, like, her nose got stuck as, like, a duck beak, and she was trying to deal with that, and then Bellatrix is like, say quack! And
say quack.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. See,
she's
I'm
like,
being
fix
creative.
This, Tonks!
Yeah.
All right. Smell this one, Tonks. No. All right, another email comes from Anna of Phoenix, Arizona. Here's a nice little topic, although, well, no, we'll talk about this. She writes, hey guys, thanks so much for all you do. Here's a subject I'd love to hear you guys weigh in on. Where do you think will be Harry Potter's impact in literature? In the future, do you think the series will be a classic in C.S. Lewis or J.R.R. Tolkien fashion, or a classic in only the fantasy genre? Will the series continue to be popular as a children and teen book, or as an adult book as well? How will HPH, we'll get to each question as we move along. So the first one, how do you guys think Harry Potter will end up in literature? I don't think we've ever talked about this. I think it would be a good topic to
discuss.
It's
going to be a classic. Absolutely.
Do you though?
Yes.
I mean,
I do. I really, really do. Because you look at the effect that it has had on our generation and just the time that we've grown up in, and you look at books like like C.S. Lewis's and Tolkien's, and they all had similar effects on the people who read them. It was very, very similar in just the way the fandom operated, I guess. Not in terms of making fan sites, but I really think that these are going to be the kind of books that people like us have our kids reading 10 and 15 years down the road, you know?
Oh, yeah, I would definitely love to get my kids into it. But it's just, I go back to that commercialized thing, though, because there's toys, there's video games, there's Harry Potter,
okay,
there's a theme park.
Andrew, a perfect example of something like this, how you can actually kind of draw on it is, look at Star Wars. It was, it was the same impact when the movie first was released. There's a ride at Disneyland. There's action figures. I would say Star Wars has more merchandise than Harry Potter.
Probably.
Probably has quite a bit because it's been around longer. But, Star Wars, yes, it's not as, when you look at it, the original trilogy is definitely aging. But, it's one of those things where it's still a classic film for what it did. Before that time, there were no special effects the way Star Wars was done. It was groundbreaking. And, it's one of those things where it had a hardcore fan base just like Harry Potter does. And it's definitely, a test of the time, and it's still around. And because the fans were so adamant about it, they wanted these other stories told. I think if we keep pushing Joe to give us some more stories, we'll get James Potter and the Elder Echoes, whatever that website was for, we'll get those stories made. So,
yeah. I don't know.
I think it'll be a classic. Because, Harry Potter books aren't going to date. There's no real sort of time references in it, except Dudley played on the PlayStation. But other than that, it's still going to be relevant to people in the future.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's definitely a timeless story. I guess since we're sort of living in the quote-unquote Harry Potter generation, I just personally have a harder time imagining it being in, See, when I think classic, I sort of think, what we see in our literature books or what we actually discuss in school or...
Well, that's true, but there's also classics in terms of, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I don't think that people who were fans of that book when it came out imagined that it would be read by third graders across the world years and years down the road, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I can even go back to what you guys were talking about, or what we were all talking about before, when you brought up the whole idea of having Harry Potter in schools. And I think that years from now, it's definitely a good possibility, because if you look around in this moment, and put aside the fact that we're all Harry Potter fans, what other books are out there that sort of define the time like these do?
It's true.
Is there really anything else? And I don't think there's been something like this in quite some time that has brought so many people together, at least in the literature aspect. So to think that it's not going to hold its ground in the next 50, 100 years, I think would be a bad assumption to make.
You know what, Micah, that also brings up, that would also answer my point where, it's the parents that would probably be kind of going, oh, what is this Harry Potter? It's a children's book. Since we're going to be, growing up as parents eventually, we're going to be saying, oh, our kids should read these books. And if it's in schools, we're going to be definitely for that. And I think, it just probably won't be able to be implemented right away. So I definitely think it's going to be a classic and last.
I just think the one huge thing that's going to be missing is the excitement.
Waiting for a book?
Leading up to the release. I mean, that's 90% of the Harry Potter fandom and thrill and excitement and, overall just the reason it's been so huge and publicized is because of the lead-up to these books has been tremendous. And, I mean... say 50 years from now, when these people pick up the book and they read Sorcerer's Stone, they'll be like, oh, this is great. Let me just get the next one. Read that. Oh, this is great. Let me read the next one. It'll be classic, but...
Well, there won't
be... You sort of understand what I'm saying.
They won't have the same experience.
Yeah. This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I mean, we're very lucky to have grown up when we have.
Yeah.
But I don't think that changes the effect the story will have on people.
No.
No, I agree completely with Laura. And again, back to my Star Wars example, I wasn't around when, you know, Star Wars was in the movie theaters, you know, the original trilogy. Yet I'm still a ridiculously huge fan of Harry Potter and Star Wars, and I know my kids are going to be fans of probably both of those because I'll be there watching it and reading it with them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They just won't get the experience of going to a midnight release.
But do you think it'll be, like, sort of that much of a classic in the future when someone's going to be picking up the first book and they're already going to be knowing, well, Harry lives in this series? Like, for us, we picked up the first book knowing nothing, but most people are going to know sort of how the story plays out.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I never questioned whether Harry was going to live or die until, you know, people started saying, well, Harry might not make it through because Joe put that in. You know, everyone kind of just assumed the hero's going to make it through. And yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, up until, you know, she said, well, how do you know Harry's going to live? You know, I don't think, you know, any of us really thought he was going to die. And that's just kind of an aspect of what we get because we're waiting for these new books. You know, it's kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, you go into, say you've never seen Star Wars, but right away you go, oh, the hero, the good guys are going to win. Same thing with like most movies, you know, the good guys are going to win, but you still jump, you still, you know, react to when the hero is being attacked by, you know, this transforming robot, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
true.
You go, oh my gosh, is he going to live? He's going to die. You still react to it, even though, you know, the good guy is going to win. It's the happy ending, you know. And if he doesn't win in this one, the sequel he's going to win, or the third one he's going to win. Finally, you know, is you know, it's going to be the same. Does you know Frodo destroy the ring? You know, we all you know we're waiting for him to drop the ring in there. But you know, sure enough, you know, eventually it happened.
And I think you can ask the same question about the last two movies. You know what's going to happen? Are you still going to see the movie?
Yeah, I think WB is going to have to put a lot more emphasis on promoting the films because, like, you got to get people more excited now, don't you? Mm-hmm. You don't have that book excitement anymore, you know, to chew off of, I guess you could say.
I wouldn't say that. I would say, you know, I'm still excited for each movie release, you know.
Yeah.
I remember Goblet of Fire, you know, I wasn't in New York with you guys. In fact, I don't think I knew you guys then. But I remember seeing it like four or five times opening weekend. And it was, again, hands down, best movie ever. You know, it was really a great movie and I enjoyed it. And yes, I had read the book and I knew what happened after it. You know, it's not, you know, it wasn't, to me, it wasn't that, you know, it's separate from the books, you know. And there are the people that don't read the books at all and they just watch the movies. You know, my little brother is one of those people. Like, I keep telling him, like, read the books. I have all of them. He's like, I don't want to read them. But he's there with me all the time at the movie. He knows what happens in the movie. And, you know, what happens is sometimes he'll ask me if he doesn't completely understand something or follow. He'll ask me, so Mike, who is that? And I'll be like, yeah, this is so-and-so. And he calls me Mike, not Mikey.
Well, you know what? My brother's 11, and when he asks me that, when he's watching a movie, I just tell him, I'm not telling you, read the book. Because, like, I really think people need to read the books on top of seeing the movies. And I don't think, like, little kids like my brother should be just relying on the movies to get what everyone else has out of the book. So I just force my brother to find out by reading.
But yeah, it could also be argued that it's a poor job on the part of the films if they're not explaining certain things.
Yeah, well, then you get into the whole, you know, we gotta cut down on stuff that doesn't really advance the plot, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess that's basically what Anna was asking. We answered all of her questions in there. Next email comes from Tanya, 23, of Montreal, Canada. She writes, hey guys, I just finished listening to the live show you did, and I found something pretty disturbing. Did you notice that almost all girls that called in were the typical quote-unquote fangirls, and all the guys who called in sounded so depressed? What's up with the MuggleCast guy listeners? Maybe you should start up the dating service and get these guys some love. I think it's just that when guys call in, they might feel a little like, well, first of all, not all guys sounded depressed, but I just think some guys, like, calling into a Harry Potter radio show, I guess I shouldn't get all excited.
I think we should do a MuggleCast.
They're trying to be manly.
No, we should do a MuggleCast dating service. Win a date with Andrew Sims.
Now, see that about a year ago, maybe not even a year ago, I tried to start the segment on the show called MuggleCast Dating Service.
No, where I know.
I had people email, but it was too complicated. It was too hard to find matches.
Difficult and matches.
It would have been a good idea, though.
You know what we should do, Andrew? You should do. You should go to like True or the eHarmony and get like the little polls that they do. You know, sign up for it yourself, Andrew, and get the little polls. And we should have fans fill them out, and we'll match them up together, and you know, in the same city,
There you go. Yeah, we'll get to one last email this week, and it's a chicken soup. It comes from Leah, 20, of Allentown, Pennsylvania.
She says, "Hi guys, I have a submission for chicken soup for the MuggleCaster's soul. I don't have a sad medical story, and I wasn't caught in a natural disaster, but MuggleCast has seriously made my life better. I'm currently a junior in college, and lately I've been questioning where my life is going. Just wait, guys, you'll probably be doing it too. But every Sunday I know that I have something solid to look forward to. I feel like I know you all, and your conversations are real and relatable. I love Harry Potter, but I love you guys more. You make my week every week, and you've truly made my life a happy one. Thanks, Leah."
Aww.
That's very nice.
How appropriate around Thanksgiving time.
Yes. Yeah.
What are you guys thankful for this Thanksgiving?
Andy?
Andy, do they celebrate Thanksgiving down there?
No, they don't.
Ah, see? There you go.
We all kind of know what it is,
that
though.
That was a joke.
Harry Potter. Oh. Well, Mike, are you thankful for Andy? Is that what you're...
No.
I'm thankful for my friends. You're supposed to go, aww.
Aww. Were your friends, Andrew?
Huh?
Your friends?
Not you guys.
Okay. Andrew, I thought we were friends, Andrew.
No, only when I need a place to stay in L.A.
Okay.
Laura, how about you? Let's all be sappy for a little. We're getting into the holiday season, so we have to gear up for that ever so corny annual MuggleCast episode.
Yeah.
We're like, happy holidays, everyone.
Well, honestly, I'm thankful for you guys. I love you guys, so I can't imagine my life without you and sappiness.
That's sweet. Micah?
Same.
Mikey? Oh. If you say Leslie, don't say Leslie.
I wasn't. Oh,
say Leslie. That's so sweet.
Well, I'm gonna say what I'm thankful for. Everything's going really good in my life right now. I'm thankful for the way things have turned out so far.
Oh, good.
So you know everything that's been going on. You know, and part MuggleCast is part of my life, so I'm thankful for that too. And you guys and everything. I'm a little teary eyed.
Yeah. Seriously, I'm not trying to sound all corny and stuff, but we really are thankful for the listeners, especially after the book release. You know, we've still had a very steady listener base, basically the same from, you know, around book movie release time. So we thank everyone for listening. We are thankful for you guys.
No, you know what? I really am. I love all the fans that contact me. You know, I go on AIM and they talk to me and I'll sit there and talk to all of them and...
Yeah, you know. They're very cool.
Yeah, they're cool. Cool. Yeah, definitely they are. And I definitely think they, you know, they're hip.
Yeah.
They're cool.
Yeah. Yep, definitely. There are a couple show-related announcements that we'll get to next week. They're more business-like, so we'll worry about this next week. The show's gone on long enough. I just want to say, guys, that tomorrow I'm going to be going to a Wizard Rock show in Philadelphia. Featuring the Whomping Willows and the Moaning Myrtles.
Fun.
Micah, you met the Moaning Myrtles?
Yeah, but you're... Well...
Huh?
Nothing.
Okay.
The Moaning Myrtles are cool, man.
They are very cool.
I'm down with the Wizard Rock.
Yeah, so it's very exciting. Rock. I'm hoping to put the show out tonight. That's why I sort of mentioned it.
Oh.
So, if anyone's in the Jersey, Philly area, I recommend you go on that show. Just check the Whomping Willows.
They were nice. Yeah,
guys, go.
They were.
Any listeners, if you go to the Whomping Willows show, go up to Matt, you know, the Whomping Willow, the tree guy that plays guitar. Go up to him, give him a big hug, and say, Mikey B says hi. Really?
I'll do that, Mikey. Yeah, I'll do it.
Thank you. But anyone else wants to get and say, Mikey B says hi. I miss Matt and Machaco. I really do.
Mm.
I love Wizard Rock. Who doesn't, really?
You know, I actually bought a Jingle Spells, and it just came in the other
day. You know, I haven't been able to get that yet, because I haven't been online.
Do you want me to burn you a copy?
It's for a good cause.
I know, that's what I said. I need
to buy it soon. I just haven't been online, because I've been working on stuff.
I have to say, it's not bad. It's not bad.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, I think that does wrap up the show today. Well, it's time to remind everyone about our contact information. Laura, if people want to send us parcel mail, including glass pickles, where do they send that?
To P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
Also, we're going to get back to voicemails very soon. We're just trying to get our voicemail box fixed. Kevin's working on that. If you're in the United States, you can call 1-218-20-MAGIC. That's 1-218-206-2442. If you're in the United Kingdom, it's 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 028-003-5668. Just like Andy. You can also
quality
Skype
number.
Yes. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just remember to keep your message under a minute and eliminate as much background noise as possible so your message is crystal clear. You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a handy feedback form to contact any one of us. And you can also use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Andy, what's the best way to contact you via email if people so choose?
Probably webmaster at harrypotterfanzone.com, or just go onto the site, fill out the contact form, and I'll get back to you.
Sweet. Don't forget of all of our community outlets over at MuggleCast.com. We got the MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing. Also, dig the show at dig.com. Vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. And rate and review us at Yahoo Podcast. Also, check out that cool new wall of fame over at MuggleCast.com. Subscribe with your Zune. And all that. It's all good. All right, Andy from HarryPotterFanZone.com, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah. No problem.
We'll have you on again soon.
Happy
you were good. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and all the other Australians, like Erica Crombie, if she still listens. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Mike Catanaville.
I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Andy McCrack.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 121. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.